Hey, it's Brian Hayes. Big news in Canada. Manscaped is officially launched throughout the country. It is time to fire up the best men's below-the-waist grooming option possible. That is Manscaped. You're going to feel better about yourself, and most importantly, your significant other is going to absolutely love it. Check out the website manscaped.com and get 20% off and free shipping with the code Hayes, that's H-A-Y-E-S, at manscaped.com. That's 20% off free shipping at manscaped.com. Use the promo code Hayes and start trimming.
That's what they're saying about George Springer, basically. You know, we'll see. Exactly. Opening day, it's a possibility. Maybe George will be out there. And now they're flying off to Kansas City, and Springer's not even on the plane. And he remains on the IL
typical
for a
Jays.
Different injury. Exactly. And the Jays are in Kansas City for four starting tonight. Still no word on who's going to start tonight. And to chat about all things baseball, we're joined now by one of the best from MLB Network and MLB Network Insider, MLB.com as well. Here's Mark Feinsand. How you doing, Mark?
I'm good. How are you?
We're doing pretty well. The Jays are at 500. They walked off the Yankees yesterday. They've taken 4 of 6 against New York. And the American League East is a tough division to get a read on right now. We're a couple weeks in, but what's your read on the division and where the Jays stand in all this?
You mean you didn't expect the Orioles to be ahead of the Yankees and Rays at this point in the season?
No, shockingly. Or the Sox to win, what, 8 in a row or whatever it was?
Yeah,
it's crazy.
God, the Red Sox, to me, the Red Sox are the biggest surprise, only because I think coming into the year, really, there was very little expectation out of this team after, you know, disappointing year last year and just sort of, you know, trying to put together Chaim Bloom's vision for this team. It seemed like there was still a lot of work to do after, you know, trading Mookie Betts and Chris Sale being hurt and everything else. And they've just come out like gangbusters, and you got to give them a lot of credit. And I think they've turned this into a division where I still don't believe anybody believes that the Orioles are going to, you know, play around 500 all year. But, you know, you could reasonably make a case for any of the other four teams to win this division, which, you know, I think coming into the year, you looked at it as kind of a three-team race.
Yeah, and the surprising thing about the division, too, you talk about the Red Sox. They got swept at the start of the season against the Orioles, and just the bounce back that they've been able to have here to allow themselves to be where they're at, pretty impressive. But, Mark, when you look at this Blue Jays team, obviously everybody looks at Vlad Guerrero Jr. as the face of the team. But when you look at this team, is it Vlad Guerrero Jr. or Bo Bichette?
Bo Bichette certainly making it his team very quickly. Yep. You know, I love Bichette. I think he's a great player. I like what he does, you know, both offensively and defensively. And obviously a good shortstop can make more of an impact on a team than almost anybody else out there. You know, I really liked the moves they made this offseason, you know, bringing in Semien. And, you know, obviously Springer, you haven't even seen him yet. So, you know, the Blue Jays have been a very impressive team to me. We knew they were going to hit. The question has always been, what is the pitching going to look like? They still have some questions they need to answer there, but certainly, you know, right now they're off to the kind of start that I think, you know, they need to hang on until they get Springer back. And then adding that kind of a bat into your lineup is going to make them even more potent.
Yeah, absolutely. A couple other injuries on, you know, in terms of the bullpen, in terms of Nate Pearson, a guy like Hatch could be an option. Julian Merriweather went back on the IL as well, and he was throwing smoke before he went down. Mm-hmm. But he's had those issues throughout his career, and it kind of comes with the program when it comes to him. But, you know, in terms of Bichette and Vladdy, this new trend in baseball about not necessarily taking advantage of the arbitration years with the true star youth players, you know, locking them in long term. We've seen it with Acuna Jr. We saw it with Tatis Jr. I think people expect Soto to get that down in D.C. at some point. Bichette is not at that level yet, clearly. Vladdy isn't there either in terms of consistency. But they're close in terms of hype, you know, and in terms of marketability in a town like this. How do you think the Jays are going to play this in terms of maybe deciding not to follow through with the whole we have control stuff that they've generally done in the past? And maybe look for a long-term security deal with both guys.
Well, I think a lot of that will depend on what the player's approach to that is as well. You know, I mean, you talked about Soto. I think the Nationals would love to lock Soto up long-term, but, you know, Soto and Scott Boras probably think the price tag for that's going to be a lot higher than the Nationals do. So,
right.
You know, I think it depends on how the agents for guys like Vlad and Bichette, view that? Do they want to just play this year to year and get to free agency where the real big score is? You know, you mentioned Acuna and Tatis. Those are two different ends of the spectrum. They're both locked up long term. Acuna took a very team friendly deal that's going to cost him millions and millions of dollars. It's probably the best deal in baseball right now.
Yep.
You know, he got less than a third of the money that Tatis did. Tatis went out
steal.
And got essentially a free agent
steal.
Contract. You know, guaranteeing himself $341 million. So the question is, how are Bichette and Guerrero going to approach this and their agents? And, you know, so it's not just a matter of whether the Jays are willing to do it. It's a matter of whether the Jays are willing to do it at a price that could get it done.
We were having, I don't know if it's a debate, but we were having a conversation last week about Ohtani and how he's such a unique player. I mean, Mike, he's overshadowed by Mike Trout, but, you know, this is a guy who's almost dominant in, not in two sports, but in two different positions where he's that good. Like, do you see him as just a unicorn? Does he get overshadowed? Is he, you know, underappreciated because he plays with Trout?
Well, I think he's underappreciated just for the fact that he's been hurt so much, and we haven't had a chance to see him do this over a full season where he's pitched and hit. If he can actually do this over 6 months, I think he will be, it's hard to argue that he might be the biggest star in the game, because he's doing something we haven't seen in a very long time, you know, over 100 years, really. I don't think it's Trout overshadowing him. I think it's just his inability to stay healthy. And, you know, for the game's sake, for Ohtani's sake, and certainly for the Angels' sake, I would love to see him just stay healthy and do his thing on both sides, pitching and hitting, for 6 months and just see what that possibility could really look like.
We're chatting with Mark Feinstein of MLB.com and MLB Network. We started the show talking about the no-hitter last night and the way it played out in the ninth inning when Rodon was rolling, and he's got Perez in an 0-2 count. A slider gets away from him. Perez, to me, he claimed after the game he didn't know it was a perfect game, which I find impossible to believe. But he didn't move. It grazed his shin. I'm sure he had a shin guard on. He sold the call. I take issue with that personally based on history alone. What did you make of that play and the outcome? Because it didn't appear to me as if Rodon was overly ecstatic with Perez and his reaction either.
Yeah, I'm sure he wasn't. I'm not really big on the whole unwritten rules of these things. I mean, look, if you're a hitter, your job is not to help contribute to the guy throwing against you to have a perfect game. Your job is to get on base. And we've seen teams make crazy comebacks late in the game before. So I can't really... You know, I mean, I know people have issue with bunting late in a no-hitter or a perfect game, yeah. That kind of thing. You know, your job is to get on base, however you can do it. If it screws up somebody else's perfect game, I sort of look at it as that's not your problem. But I could understand why Rodon would have not taken kindly to the whole situation.
Yeah, and he was probably upset with himself. Again, he had him 0-2, he was rolling, and it got away from him. I mean, it was a slider that hit him in the foot.
Yeah, it wasn't like the Conforto situation
where he leaned his elbow into
the strike zone and took one, right?
Exactly.
I mean, this was a slider that got away and then hit him in the shin, and he didn't make a real big effort to get out of the way, but who knows, maybe he just couldn't read the slider that well and didn't even realize it was going to hit him. But, if this is a situation like we saw with Conforto last week where he, you know, dipped his arm into the strike zone to take one, I think I would have a problem with that.
Oh, yeah.
Just because that's a little bit of a different situation. I mean, how many times did we see, you know, Barry Bonds, David Ortiz, guys like that who crowd the plate, stand there and get hit by a pitch that was over the plate? So, you know, different situation there. But, you know, at least Rodon was able to finish off the no-hitter and, you know, sort of get out of there with a little piece of history.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's twice in a week, more or less, in baseball, and 20 for the Sox throughout their history, which they got a rich history, clearly, but only the Dodgers have more with 23.
That's pretty impressive, especially when you consider that the Padres got their first this week, right?
So, right.
Yeah, 20, it's funny. My wife said to me last night, she said, well, how many people have thrown no-hitters? And I said, I don't know, a lot. But, you know, I know there have been at least five or six White Sox, and all of a sudden they flashed it up there at the 20th no-hitter. I was like, okay, we're 20, either way.
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty – like, I remember Burley had one. Did Burley have a perfect game and a no-hitter?
Burley was a perfect game, yep.
Yeah, exactly. But whenever I think of the of a perfect game, like, again, at least to your point, Rodon got the no-hitter. But it just – it's flashbacks of Jim Joyce and Galarraga.
Sure.
And clearly, you know, Perez is not literally playing the role of an umpire blowing a call the way Joyce did. But whenever I can think back to that play – It's still shocking. It's been, how long has it been? 10 years, Mark? Something like that?
Yeah, about that.
It's still, like, do you remember your reaction to that? Were you as heated as most people were that Joyce just went hero mode and stole a perfect game away from him?
Yeah, I mean, I think my reaction was, man, they got to get instant replay, and then they got it eventually. You know, you hated seeing that kind of thing. I get sour talking about perfect games because before I started doing this for a living, I gave away tickets to David Wells' perfect game and David Cohn's perfect game.
No way.
That's tough luck, man.
One of them I was just tired and didn't want to go. The other one I had to work. And then in my first year covering, I was covering the Yankees-Red Sox when Mussina got to 8 2/3, and then Carl Everett broke it up with one out to go. So I just feel like I'm destined never to see one, but maybe one of these years.
Yeah.
So, Hayes, I was talking to you about, you know, when players – are they actually trying to break up the no-hitter? I don't know who was running the first base on that time with the Galarraga perfect game. He was sprinting down first base.
Yes,
it's like, dude, jog it a little bit, man. Like, don't make it that close. Mark, I don't know how you feel about that.
No player, right? Players are competitive by nature. This is what they do for a living. They are professional competitors. You don't want to be on the other side of a perfect game. It's just not, I mean, I realize, you know, you individually only went 0-3. There are plenty of nights that you go 0-3 and your team wins or whatever it may be. But you just don't want to be on the other side of that. So I you know, every time I see somebody say, "Oh, well, he shouldn't have been doing this or that," I'm like, you know what? His job is to do this or that. Mm-hmm. We get on players all the time for not running hard and for loafing to first base. You know what? Go sprint. If they can get you out, they'll get you out.
Yep. Well, I'm sure we'll be back down this road again at some point soon. I mean, it's an evergreen topic of baseball. It pops up all the time. And we always appreciate the insight and the time. Thank you for doing this, Mark.
You got it. Take it easy.
There's Mark Feinstein of MLB Network and MLB.com. Missing out on two perfect games.
Yeah, that's tough. Yeah,
that's
that
a tough one.
Hurts, man. That David Wells one is so historic because he was so hungover as well.
It's even better now that he's told the story. Like,
yeah,
that's legendary.
Yeah, it means more now that he was hungover. It was a day game, Yankee Stadium, New York. Wells, remember how bitter he was when he got traded back to the Jays? He was so mad because he loved being a Yankee. And he was, you know, he was a part of those glory years, too, in the late 90s. But, yeah.
It reminds me of the scene of the movie from Fever Pitch where he goes to every game, and the one game he gives up to his buddies, it's in the ninth inning, and the Yankees are down by like 8 runs, and the Red Sox make this incredible comeback, and they call him and just start rubbing it in. I can't believe you missed the best game in the world.
I know. That's a good question. Like, in terms of what great historic sporting moments could happen at a game you were supposed to be at. Yeah. Because you can't include like Game 7 Cup Final, the Leafs win. Like, obviously, that goes without saying. We're talking random historical events during the regular season, like a perfect game. You know, maybe in Toronto, I bet you there's stories of guys that were supposed to be there for Sittler's 10-point game. I bet you someone was supposed to go to that game and last minute said, forget it, not feeling it tonight.
Or someone going to the Kawhi shot game.
Yes, that would be one for sure. Like, although that's Game 7, but still, yes, absolutely. There's history that you missed.
Remember the I think Hayes, you and I were at the Joey Bats.
Yeah,
bat
Anno
flip, right?
Was there. All three of us were there. None
of
us.
Oh my God, you guys were at that game.
But I left a bit early because I was like, I went across to Harbor 60 to continue drinking. Like,
you
I
left in the eighth inning.
Yeah,
it
I left in
the
eighth.
Seventh. You caught the seventh, and then you're like, I'm out of here. It's not going to get any better than this.
Giant delay, and I was like, all right, like, let's go here, move it along, and like it was. But I did catch that. I caught the delay and then the bat flip, and I was like, all right, we're out of here. But the delay, that was almost a riot on our hands.
That was a 52-minute inning, I believe. And a lot of it all started in the top of the inning, remember? When Martin threw the ball off the bottom of the bat, and it was crazy, man.
That was Odor, wasn't it? Odor was the guy that scored from third or something.
I can't remember who was on third. It might have been Odor.
They couldn't figure out what the hell was going on.
Yeah.
And then they called him out, or it was something crazy, and the people were throwing things on the field.
Yeah.
And
the call was correct. They got it right. Like, the baseball rules, Martin was in the wrong. It was a mistake, but it was in the wrong. Oh. And
Scary stuff. That was crazy.
Yeah, we were all three of us were there. O Noodles and myself, and none of us were sitting together. We were all in different parts of the park, which was crazy because we came together the next day and we all had a different viewpoint and we're going through a different experience. And it was wild. Like that would be one. Clearly, like missing the bat flip game, missing the Kawhi shot, Sitler 10 points. There's a lot of potential. Like, I can't believe I did that. I can't believe I missed out on that opportunity.
Well, I know when the St. Louis Cardinals won their first World Series in the 2000s, I was living in St. Louis at that time, and they played
05, I think, yeah.
Was it? No, I think it was later than that. It was probably 9 or 10 when they did it. Anyways, I was supposed to go to that game, but we were on a road trip out west. So the wives and all the girls go to Game 7.
No way.
They watch them win the World Series, and I get the troll call afterwards from my wife saying, "Oh my God, this moment is unbelievable.
No way.
We just watched the World Series." And I'm like, "Great, I'm stuck at a hotel in Edmonton. Thanks for sharing."
Oh, that's brutal. Yeah, that would have been later, because I think 05, the Sox won, actually. Sure enough, I think Red Sox won in 04. I think the White Sox won in 05. Wasn't that Ozzie Guillen?
It was the year they beat Texas in the World Series, where Nelson Cruz bobbled Game 6, and then David Freese hit it off.
Might have been in 06, because the Sox won in 04 and 07. Anyway, it doesn't matter. We can look it up. But yeah, that's wild, man. That
Grappler says 2011.
2011.
So.
Okay. Yeah. There you go. Way off.
Yeah. Way off. Imagine getting that call from your wife. Just partying it up. This town's going crazy. The city just won a World Series, and I'm stuck in a hotel in Edmonton.
She's Gooned and Soulard.
There's
an area. There's an area in St. Louis called Soulard.
Yep.
Down by the stadium.
There,
and that is Chaser's wheelhouse. Back in the day,
Chaser would have been right behind home plate for that.
Mike Shannon's right by the stadium.
Yes, Mike Shannon's. Just some great places in that area.